Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 16 of the World Soccer Talk podcast, we discuss Turner Sports, the shocking acquisition of the UEFA Champions League rights in the United States and what it means for soccer fans. Also, what soccer fans need to know about YouTube's new live streaming service. And also, we've got news about a new Premier League Behind the Badge series coming from NBC and much, much more, also including your questions. Kartik, how are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well, Chris. Thank you.
All right, cool, Kartik. So let's jump right into what we've been watching this past week. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer. Kartik, let me turn it over to you in terms of some of the matches that you've been seeing and anything that jumped out at you this past week.
Yeah, the Bayern HSV game, Bayern Hamburg game. Bayern has had this rough stretch of five matches where they were four matches to start the spring season, if you will, or the post-winter break Bundesliga, where they were fortunate to pull through through two of them, and then had two draws, right? And one of the draws last week at Ingolstadt, they were extremely fortunate with, not at Ingolstadt, at Hertha, where they were very fortunate with that late stoppage time goal on a free kick where it was the 6th minute of what announced 4 or 5 minutes of stoppage time. So they had been playing very poorly coming into this game against Hamburg, poorly in the Bundesliga. Of course, we saw them crush Bayern, crush Arsenal 5-1 in the midst of that difficult stretch where they were scoring late goals to escape game after game. And Leipzig is, in spite of all the problems Red Bull Leipzig has had coming out of the break, they are still only 5 points behind Bayern. So thought, okay, Hamburg really needs this match. Maybe they're gonna be cagey. Maybe they'll play defensively. They just got ripped to shreds. 8-0 was the final. And it was a treat to have Eric Winalda on commentary because he was able to really dissect all of the defensive mistakes that Hertha was making. And I have to say, Hamburg. I have to say that this is going to probably irk a lot of our listeners. But the more I watch Fox, including the studio with Warren Barton and Alexi Lawless, and they were in studio for Huddersfield and Manchester City, the more I'm getting an appreciation for how much they understand the art of defending, believe it or not. And that when they're tuned in, I mean, a lot of times Lawless is resorting to hyperbole and Barton gives you the obvious commentary. But when they're tuned in, they're able to dissect defending in a way that I think a lot of the analysts on other networks don't. Well, partly because Lawless and Barton were defenders, and I think Winalda is just very smart and very bookish about the sport. So he was really good in breaking down all of the mistakes in positioning and turns and just general defending and tactical thought process for the Hamburg players. So that was an 8-0 game. The next day,
actually, Kartik, I was just going to add in terms of that game though too. I mean, like, how often is it that you see, I mean, score lines like that? Well, not so much maybe this season, but in previous seasons in the Bundesliga.
Oh, all the time.
Right, and it just shows kind of like just the gulf in talent between the top and the bottom. You don't see that as much in the Premier League in terms of at least the games are more kind of closer score lines. But still, to me, it's a kind of a poor reflection on the Bundesliga. I mean, you want to kind of see more competitive games rather than kind of one-sided matches. But it is what it is, I guess. I mean, Hamburg's in a lot of trouble, so...
I wonder whether I like these score lines, which are predictable, better than if the top teams drop points, I'm all for it. But watching the agonizingness of a Bayern pulling out result after result, the way Manchester United under Ferguson used to, you get your hopes up thinking, oh, my gosh, Wolves is going to get a point here or yep. West Brom's going to get a point here. And then there's the late stoppage time goal. That's been happening with Bayern now. It's almost... Maybe it'd be better if in the Fergie days Manchester United was beating teams 8-0 and we would not get our hopes up every week that they were going to drop points. And same deal for Chelsea when they were really rolling the first season under Ancelotti when they scored 103 goals in the league, I want to say, something just ridiculous. And then obviously one of the seasons under Mourinho, they were absolutely unbeatable also and were winning by those sorts of score lines. So Mourinho part one, not Mourinho part two, when they were winning a lot of 1-0s and pulling out games the way Bayern has this season. So, yeah, that is a very valid critique of the Bundesliga. The flip side of that is La Liga, where we used to see those sorts of score lines and we just aren't anymore. I have to say, it was a bitter disappointment. Bein's Sunday. Well, first, before we get to that, Bein led into had, of course, the League Cup final, and in that League Cup final, it was quite good in the sense that they had good build up with Thomas Rongen and co in studio, and I thought Southampton played brilliantly. Claude Puel, as Stuart Robson mentioned on the commentary, another network Stuart Robson's been with now. We've talked about Stuart Robson, Fox, NBC, ESPN. He knew he's contracted to ESPN. We had that conversation just last week.
Yep.
Didn't even think about Bein for the League Cup final. But so Stuart Robson, Bravo on the fourth network in the U.S., he made some very good points tactically that Claude Puel was spot on. Mm-hmm. Southampton had everything right. They just got unlucky. Obviously, I think Gavardini's first goal should have stood. He scores two more, but there's the brilliance of Ibra. So that was the League Cup final. That led into the Villarreal-Real Madrid game. And this is one of the best matches of football I've watched all season, Chris. But it also left such a sour taste in my mouth and the mouths of so many people because of what happened and what transpired. First half was very open, very entertaining, but it was 0-0. Ray Hudson was getting off the edge of his seat constantly, which to me is quite annoying. He gets excited about every little thing. Phil Shane, as usual, really good, really professional, having to try and keep Hudson grounded or just indulging him. Then the second half, Villarreal gets out to a 2-0 lead. All those good chances they had in the first half finally paying off. And then there was this bizarre call that gave Real Madrid a penalty, changed the match. They end up winning 3-2. And you just kind of knew what was going to happen after that call. They get the 3 points, which obviously they gave points back midweek. We'll get to that later, I'm sure. But great telecast from Bein. Just another match in La Liga. And we've talked about this before. Another match in La Liga this season influenced by the officials. It's happening every single week.
Yep.
And it's I think diminishing a lot of outsiders' enthusiasm for the league because they feel like Barcelona and Real Madrid are always getting these calls. And it happened last season when Barcelona played Atleti, I think in both matches, and essentially took Atleti out of the title race was the odd calls in both legs. And then when in Champions League, when they played each other, Atleti got a favorable call and went through, remember, in the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. But this was just a terrible call, one of the most egregious calls you'll see all season, and Real Madrid won. So that was my week, and then of course Huddersfield, Man City, I mentioned earlier.
So, Kostek, do you think in terms of those key decisions, especially in this Villarreal Real Madrid game, do you think bribes were involved? I mean, obviously you wouldn't know, but from the refs, I mean, is that something where it's such a bizarre, controversial call that it just doesn't make sense?
So ESPN FC got into that the next day, and Sid Lowe was on and said, hey, it was just a gift, Real Madrid. Because Villarreal said, look, the ref was leaving with a Real Madrid back. So it's not that we're just pulling this out of thin air. Villarreal's club officials are implying it happened because the refs left with a Real Madrid bag. What Sid Lowe said was that it is customary in Spain for some clubs to give gifts to the referees, just, you know, club swag or whatever. Wow. Well, you know, I don't know that that's an acceptable practice.
Right.
And clearly Villarreal, maybe they've engaged in it themselves in the past. I don't know. I don't want to say that they haven't, but they clearly felt like there was some quid pro quo.
Yeah.
So it's a messy situation. And I think that the reaction on the ESPN FC show was one of a little bit of shock from Moreno and from Craig Burley. We've seen in Major League Soccer when a referee, this is now going back 8 years, and he stole referee Jair Berufo, took a shirt in the 2009 season from Cuauhtemoc Blanco after the game from Chicago Fire. Mm-hmm. Columbus complained. Columbus Crew were the opposing team. Marufo was demoted to the second division for the rest of the season and only reemerged in Major League Soccer a year later as an official. Mm-hmm. So it's not an acceptable practice in the United States. I know it's not an acceptable practice in England or Germany. It'd be interesting to get Gab Marcotti's take. He wasn't on the show at that particular point, although he tends to be on the show every day,
right.
To see if it's acceptable, if it's commonplace in Italy. I'm not sure it is. So, yeah, this game has created a lot of buzz, a lot of controversy. And again, it's so tragic because I think Villarreal played, for me, one of the best games I've seen against a big team all season. We've seen Real Madrid drop points. We've seen Barcelona drop points. We've seen Bayern drop points, and even Chelsea occasionally drop points in the Premier League, and certainly PSG dropping a ton of points in Liga 1. But I don't remember a game that I had watched start to finish where the opposing team played this well against one of those top European teams and then didn't even get a point out of it.
Right, right. Yeah, and going back onto this one in terms of the video assistant referee, I mean, that's probably a good example in terms of at least making the game fairer and removing the opportunity for, if there are bribes. I mean, not saying that there is, but you mean we know in the past there have been in different leagues around the world. But actually rewinding even a little bit further back to the League Cup final, I mean, to me, Kartik, I mean, Southampton got completely robbed in this game.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, it was a blatant. I mean, so having a video assistant referee and having them look at that instance, I mean, immediately they said, okay, that should have been a goal. And then in clear-cut opportunities like that, it makes total sense. Like we talked about last week, too, when it's kind of a very subjective, whether it's a handball, and we saw that in the Man City Huddersfield game, handballs, actually, or if it's a penalty call where it's, I mean, it's so hard to tell.
Yeah, but, I mean, Lawless actually counted in the Manchester City Huddersfield game, and I think he counted three handballs that weren't called. In the first half, at halftime, he counted that. So that's, again, I mean, maybe the video assistant referee isn't as vigilant as Alexi Lawless is sitting in the Fox studio about critiquing and analyzing this stuff. But if he's halfway as vigilant as Lawless, you at least have one or two overturned calls,
right,
which will make the game fairer.
Exactly. So the Man United against Southampton game, I really enjoyed this one, Kartik. Over the weekend, my daughter was playing travel soccer, so pretty much the whole entire weekend I was driving her around to different games. So I recorded it with Fubo on the DVR, recorded it on Sunday morning, and then got home, I think, Sunday evening, and then watched the whole thing through Fubo. And it worked, basically took out my Chromecast and then casted it from my computer to the TV screen, and it was perfect. Really enjoyed the match. I thought it was really entertaining and a great cup final match. And I just really felt bad for Southampton. As a neutral, as a Southampton fan, I can just I can't even imagine how upset they must have been about this one. I enjoyed too the pre-game coverage with Kay Murray, Thomas Rongen, and Gary Bailey. And hats off to beIN Sports too for showing the trophy celebration after the game too.
I have to say, Kay Murray has really grown into a top presenter. And hint, hint to Turner Sports. We'll get to that later in the show.
I watched a bunch of other matches, too. I mean, some of the ones that stood out for me, I'm just going to mention Leicester against Liverpool. And this one, Kartik, again, is another instance of something that NBC did that not a lot of people knew about. But I just happened to be online, I think about noon Eastern time on Monday, and saw that Arlo White was live streaming from the King Power Stadium at Leicester. And he was doing a behind-the-scenes Facebook Live video stream to show kind of all his preparation that goes into a match, and showed Graeme Lasseau, and then walked you through the stadium, showed where the commentary gantry was, and kind of where everyone sits, etc. And I thought it was really very insightful. He showed us kind of all the equipment that they use, the match cameras, the lip mics, and he answered questions from I guess, Facebook readers. And again, I thought it was a great way to kind of bring you into the broadcast and show you kind of all the hard work, the hours of time that goes into a broadcast like that, just from the match itself. Obviously, there's a lot of more work being done by the production crew in Stamford, Connecticut. But I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed that one. Pre-game, Kartik, here we go again. NBC Sports for the Leicester-Liverpool match used the touchscreen tablets in really what is, to me at this point, it's an infomercial for, I won't mention the name of the company, and we had Robbie Earle and I think Musto at this time, and they pretended, actually was it?
It was Martino.
And they pretended to use the tablets to show on-screen tactical analysis with Leicester. And I mean, to me, it's like, come on, NBC Sports, you're better than that. The game itself, Kartik, I enjoyed. Really good game. I actually missed the second half because, again, I had to take my daughter to a soccer game.
From Liverpool's perspective.
Well, from the neutral's perspective.
I guess, you know, the reality is after the game, I tweeted, or at halftime, I think I tweeted, this was entirely predictable. Liverpool against a bottom side. I mean, if you want to create some momentum, maybe Leicester made the move when they did because they knew that this was a game Ranieri would probably end up winning. And they didn't want to then be stuck with him for a while longer. But it was just a good telecast from NBC. I think Liam McHugh, by the way, has really grown into this role. He's generally does hockey games on NBC. Yeah. But he's really grown into this role as the midweek host for Premier League Live and for the halftime show. But, boy, what a dud of a game from Liverpool's perspective. And they're just coming apart at the seams. Unfortunately, I'll let you get back to your list in a minute, but I had predicted before the season Liverpool would finish eighth or ninth in the league. Just got battered on Twitter, rightfully so, for about 3 months by Liverpool supporters, who we know many of whom are not very—they're not very nuanced in how they present themselves. And I haven't heard from any of them since the new year. Really, I mean, it's been 2 months of this, and this is the Liverpool I actually expected to see before the season. So I think, in spite of the critiques now of Jurgen Klopp, he's gotten more out of this team than just about any other manager would. You look at their club, I think maybe Mane and maybe Coutinho, maybe not, would get into another top side. And perhaps Jordan Henderson.
Yeah.
But that's it. They do not have a top four level of player. Yet they're hanging around. I mean, they're right around Man United and Man City and Arsenal on the table. All three of those sides have much better players, much better personnel. Mm-hmm. And Tottenham has much better personnel, in my opinion, and they beat Tottenham a few weeks ago. So I think there's now a lot of criticism of Klopp coming because he's been cursed by having such a good start. But this is the Liverpool I think I expected to see. Not I think. I know I expected to see before the season, and I think other pundits deep down expected to see as well. So Liverpool fans should go easy on Jurgen Klopp because he's got a massive rebuild and doesn't have the squad that other Premier League managers do. And I think it's going to take another window or two.
Yeah, it was one of those matches where it was like, kind of, as I was watching it, it was like, okay, is Leicester this good? Is Liverpool that bad? And based on, you know, from the matches we've seen in 2017, except for a couple of exceptions, yes, it is. Liverpool is that bad. For Leicester, though, it'll be a nice confidence boost, and let's see if they can continue playing at that level, at that intensity. We should have to wait and see what happens there. One more match, Kartik, I want to point out, and that was Brighton against Newcastle United. I watched this one on, I think, Tuesday. What a match. I watched this one on beIN Sports. It was first against second, another one of those games for Brighton, actually, where they were far the better team for the majority of the game, but Newcastle came back and sneaked two late goals to win it 2-1 at the death. One of which was from Diame, which was probably one of the luckiest goals you'll ever see, just kind of a deflection, but he might have actually intended it. And the second goal from Newcastle, the one that won it, was after a stupendous 80-yard driven pass by Matt Ritchie, probably one of the best passes I've seen this entire season from any league. Absolutely incredible, but really quality game from both sides. And to me, both of those teams look at least at that level, Premier League quality. Obviously, if they both go up, I'm sure both of them are going to start having to buy a bunch of players to strengthen the side. But it was a really quality game, and really enjoyed it.
I should point out that Brighton has typically faded late in the season these last few years. And last year, they were very unlucky not to be promoted, right? There were three teams that had separated themselves from the rest of the league. It was Borough, Brighton, and Burnley. And they ended up being that third team, ended up in a playoff and got upset. And I can totally see how that happens the disappointment after you push so hard for automatic promotion. They have been hanging around for years and years and years under Gus Poyet, and then under his successor, whose name escapes me, but he was also, I think he was also South American, and then now under Chris Hughton, who's one of the top managers in English football, in my opinion. If they don't go up, if they don't, or if they're not automatically promoted this year, if Huddersfield catches them, or it's looking less likely Reading or Leeds will catch them, but if Huddersfield happens to catch them, I don't know how they're going to fare in the playoffs, and that could be the moment where this side gets completely broken up finally.
Yeah, and actually Newcastle plays Huddersfield this weekend. I think Brighton will be okay. I mean they're playing at a high enough level. They just have to basically keep it together.
Right. And at this point, if there wasn't a history with them not keeping it together, I wouldn't even bring it up. But there have been clubs in the past that have been like this. Preston North End under David Moyes for several years, and then that side was inherited by Billy Davies, who kind of kept it going. They were knocking on the door of the Premier League every year, and they were in the playoffs every year, and they were usually not the sixth. They were the three or the four, and they never made it. I think it was four times in 6 years they went to the playoffs, didn't make it up. It almost happened with Cardiff before they finally got automatically promoted, and they went right back down. Mm-hmm. But Brighton is in that zone where they could fall away if they don't go up this season. So that's why I'm concerned about it. If it were any other club, I probably wouldn't be. But they have a history, including last season, of I don't want to say bottling it at the end because it's such a tough thing to do, but not keeping that level throughout the season when the going really got tough.
Yeah, I hope they make it. I mean, they've got a great stadium.
I do too.
They play a great brand of football. They're definitely appealing to watch, so fingers crossed on that one. And then last but not least, one thing I did this week was a little bit different. Is I listened to an interview. This is with Kyle Martino on Grant Wall's Planet Football podcast at Sports Illustrated. So it's on SoundCloud if you didn't get a chance to listen to it, but I actually really recommend it. He talks about what it was like working at ESPN and Fox, and then what the difference is at NBC. He also goes into the detail about kind of the planning and research that goes into his prep for every Premier League weekend. And that's pretty enlightening and revealing. At the same time, Kartik, I think you and I have talked about on this show and in articles previously, in terms of kind of, we can see the amount of work he does and the amount of detail and analysis and critique. I mean, he's definitely at the top of his game in this country. And kind of as he goes through the interview, he kind of talks about all the preparation he does. And that gives you a good idea of why he is so much improved from the days when he started out after retiring from soccer through injury. So the first half of the interview is really recommended. There's a middle part that they start talking about Trump and politics, which kind of turned me off. So I skipped past that part. I wasn't into that. But then the last part of the interview is really enlightening, as Carl Martino discusses how he was blocked by the U.S. Soccer Federation from attending a U.S. men's national team press conference while NBC Sports had the rights to some USA games. And he goes into detail. Basically, it's kind of a conversation, or actually, it was a critique that he had about Klinsmann. And then he got a call from U.S. Soccer, I think a couple of hours later, to say that Klinsmann wasn't happy with what he said and wanted to talk to him. And I think Kyle kind of blew him off a little bit because he said he was catching a plane. And then the next thing he found out, he had his credentials taken away from him. so it was interesting.
I gotta listen to this interview because that's that is a repeating theme, a recurring theme in the U.S. soccer world, in the Sunil Gulati administered U.S. Soccer Federation. So I'm anxious to listen to that. I may want to listen to the political part too, because Martino tends my views on Trump tend to correspond with his. So not sure where Grant Wall is on everything, but I might want to listen to that political part too. But I think this is, look, we have a U.S. soccer election next year. And Sunil Gulati could get a serious challenge if he runs again. Term limits apparently don't apply to him, even though there's going to be a term limit put in place. And again, the governance of U.S. soccer is very confusing. They're not transparent at all. Mm-hmm. So we don't even know the process for qualifying as a candidate and running for president. There are several former players who've expressed an interest in potentially running the U.S. Soccer Federation, one of which is Jimmy Conrad. who has been a critic also of U.S. soccer. But Martino and Taylor Twellman both, as things were really unraveling with Klinsmann, the U.S. women's CBA, and the whole Division II kerfuffle between NASL and USL, both had indicated that they felt like maybe the time was right for someone else to lead U.S. soccer into the future. And my question is, will there be continued IDing of journalists as we go into a U.S. soccer election year and U.S. soccer's attempts to lure the 2026 World Cup to the United States? And I haven't listened to the interview yet. I need to go back and listen to it. But I'm thinking maybe Martino referenced, in talking about Donald Trump, referenced the U.S. bid for 2026, which I think whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, a liberal or a conservative, you could probably agree Trump's election has not helped the U.S. Chances to get the 2026 World Cup, just based on global perception. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not making a political commentary here. I'm just giving you some reality from how it's being viewed abroad. So maybe Martino addressed that in that political portion of the pod. And I have to say, Sunil Gulati's entire legacy he has hitched to getting the World Cup back to the United States. He's done a lot of good things for U.S. soccer, a lot of bad things too, but there are some very good things he's done. But his entire legacy of 30 years in this sport and 12 years or more, if he goes again as U.S. soccer president, is effectively hitched to that. And he's still smarting, as I think a lot of people in the political class are smarting from not getting the 2022 World Cup here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big topic, Kartik, and especially with 2026 and also kind of everything that's happening in terms of immigration and foreign policy. That's a big one. So let's move on from that one, Kartik, because I don't want to get into politics. So before we move to segment two, I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor, SeatGeek, for making this show possible. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. And if you're like me and you're kind of looking ahead to some of these, whether it's International Champions Cup coming this summer, Gold Cup, etc., probably a whole bunch of international friendlies on top of that too, I'm sure. One of the places to go to is SeatGeek. And for listeners to the World Soccer Talk podcast, I've got an opportunity for you to get a $20 rebate. Now, the SeatGeek app is on the phone, so you can download it for iTunes or Android. And everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports fans. It does a price comparison for you by searching the multiple ticket sites and then ensuring that you get the best deal possible. It does all the work for you and saves you time and money. And then also it grades each of the seats based on value. So you'll immediately see which are the underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Now, so best of all for listeners to this podcast, you get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, go ahead and download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and then click add a promo code. Enter promo code WSTPOD and then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Now, Kartik, on to segment two, and that's our TV streaming news. The big news coming out this week is YouTube TV. So it's a brand. We've been talking about this for a few months in terms of we knew that something was coming, and they had the press conference this week in Los Angeles. So here's what we know so far for soccer fans. So it's going to launch in the next few months, and initially will be available in the largest cities in the U.S. So it's not going to be nationwide. It's going to be select cities nationwide. What it does include for soccer fans, it includes over-the-air channels, which is a big deal, and that's Fox, ABC, CBS, NBC. And with that, though, for soccer fans, so the ones you really want to care about really would be Fox over-the-air, NBC over-the-air. It also includes NBCSN, FS1, FS2, Fox Soccer Plus as an add-on channel, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN3, and then you've got your Telemundo's, Comcast Sports Network, USA, NBC Universo, CNBC, and unlimited DVR recordings, which is a big deal. And that's going to be $35 a month. That doesn't include the Fox Soccer Plus. We don't know what the price is going to be on that. But it's a pretty attractive offering out of the gate. What it doesn't include so far is Turner Sports, and we'll be getting more into that in a little bit. beIN Sports, beIN Sports en Español, beIN Sports Connect, Fox Sports Net, Univision, Univision Deportes, Unimas, and Lifetime. So bottom line is it could be an attractive proposition to some soccer fans, but it's missing a lot of the key soccer-related channels for the hardcore soccer fans, especially fans of La Liga and Liga MX. And the big question, too, is really kind of, you mean, what's the rollout of this going to be? If it's going to be just the U.S. largest cities in the beginning, what does that mean then for those of us who are outside those largest cities, such as myself and many of, you, the listeners? So my thinking is probably those over-the-air channels probably won't be available, and then you've got an offering that's pretty decent for the $35 a month. But the big, to me at least, the most appealing factor is the unlimited DVR recordings, which that's a huge plus. So we'll have to wait and see. Well, I'm sure there'll be more news coming out in the next couple of months as they get ready to launch it. But Kartik, any first impressions in terms of what you've heard so far about that?
I have not heard anything about the product itself other than some excitement for cord cutters that they can legally get these channels via YouTube, a service that they're used to using anyway, and I think it just continues that this is a way of potentially between Sling and Fubo and YouTube TV and other services, DirecTV Now, a way of stopping the bleeding of the loss of cable subscribers for the cable channels. And you wonder if these things continue to be successful if cable companies themselves, who are losing subscribers, Comcast, AT&T's cable service, which is now kind of, UVerse is kind of being folded into DirecTV, Verizon Fios, et cetera, go ahead and advocate for a la carte cable. Now, if they advocate for a la carte cable eventually, where people can pick and choose their channels, which will then undercut maybe some of Sling and Fubo and YouTube TV's appeal, what does that do to ESPN, which gets 20 times the amount per cable subscription that AMC probably gets, right? And their ability to bid for major sporting properties. So a lot going on here. I think the industry is very dynamic and the situation is very fluid.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, though, too, that it is a lot of still the TV companies or these media companies that are in control. So they're the ones that are negotiating with YouTubes and the Sling TVs of the world and et cetera, Sony, et cetera. But oftentimes it's okay, like, all right, ESPN will say, okay, ESPN, you can have ESPN, but with that you have to take ESPN 2, you have to take ESPN 3. Same thing with Fox, too. Fox will say, okay, well, you have to take FS1, FS2, Fox Soccer Plus, et cetera. This one's a little bit different in that it's more of a skinny bundle. It's not as inflated as some as a Sling or a PlayStation View where you get just a ton of channels. Most of ones you probably don't watch. So at least with this one, it's skinnier where you can pick and choose. Well, you can't even pick and choose. You get those channels through YouTube. Now, as far as add-on, I believe Showtime is going to be one that you can add on. Fox Soccer Plus, I mentioned that before too. I don't believe HBO is part of this. But I think we're still at a point, Kartik, where there's no perfect streaming solution yet, because I think the perfect streaming solution is you have a checklist and say, okay, I want these channels and I'm willing to, you know, this is what the price is. Right now, it's okay, basically, you take packages. Okay, you package one, two, or three, whatever the case may be, and then you pick and choose the one that's the best fit for you. Still, there's going to be channels that you're not going to be interested in that you're paying for. So we're not there yet, and I think it's going to take quite some time before we get there. But this is the first step. This is kind of giving people the opportunity to watch stuff legally that's cheaper than cable, cheaper than satellite, and still ensures that these big media companies get a ton of money at the end of the day. So Kartik, any other news out there in the media space?
Yeah, a lot this week. So we've talked about AT&T, Time Warner potential merger. AT&T has agreed to buy Time Warner for $85.4 billion. let's first see if regulators approve this before we get too excited. I think there's going to be a lot of questions asked about this sort of consolidation in the industry, continued consolidation in the industry. Turner Sports, who we're going to talk about later in the show, is owned by Time Warner. And AT&T, of course, bought DirecTV 2 years ago. DirecTV at one time had the spillover rights, or the rights to games that Fox was not showing on their channels. This was before FS1 and FS2 launched. To air those UEFA Champions League and UEFA Europa League games on DirecTV, on spillover channels on DirecTV, which makes me wonder if you're going to see something similar happen with Turner, where they're going to use DirecTV, if this merger is approved, as an outlet to show if you've got eight matches on a given day during the group stage. They can only show one on TBS and one on TNT. Let's say, for instance, the other six games are available streaming, but they're also available on these spillover channels on DirecTV. Or did they even use the DirecTV Now service to promote that? That's another question. Maybe that's where they go. So if these two huge media companies are approved the merger, then we might be having that conversation. I want to caution our listeners. AT&T attempted to buy T-Mobile's U.S. division. T is, of course, a German company, but the U.S. division in 2011, the Justice Department blocked that merger. Mm-hmm. So, but they have not blocked AT&T's other consolidation of the industry. The DirecTV purchase, the purchase of Pac Bell. All of those things have been approved in the past. So I don't know. I mean, we're in a regulatory environment where perhaps this will be approved. But it is possible this deal gets rejected. So don't jump ahead of ourselves with it just yet.
Right. Yeah. Looks like there might be some changes coming up in terms of at least cable subscriptions and satellite subscriptions, et cetera, in terms of product offerings. Perhaps we'll have to wait and see. Also coming up this weekend, Behind the Badge returns to the NBCSN with the Premier League, and the next series that's coming up that starts this weekend is going to be West Bromwich Albion, which by saying that, Kartik, I probably like half of the listeners probably tuned out with that kind of thing, like, oh god, West Brom, who's interested in West Brom? But I saw a clip of this, just a 2 minute clip of the show, and so far at least center stage is Tony Pulis. And you kind of get, I think this is going to be a really interesting series, Kartik, because it looks like it's going to really kind of help us understand what makes Tony Pulis tick. Now, of course, there's a lot of critics of Tony Pulis, but you have to look at his coaching career and look at him as a success. I mean, at the clubs he's gone to, he's been able to kind of push up. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch this one.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting, and I think you'll get a real insight into the mind of Tony Pulis. So that gives me an incentive to watch. And the Behind the Badges are great anyway, so I'm almost certain to watch it anyway.
Right.
This week also we have the Sheep Leaves Cup here in the United States, which is an annual women's soccer tournament that features Germany, United States, France, and England. The non-U.S. games are on Fox Sports Go, which included yesterday's England-France game. And this Saturday, England versus the United States is on Fox Sports, Big Fox, over-the-air Fox, on your local Fox affiliate, provided they don't preempt it the way some Fox channels do. I'm very familiar with that, with soccer games being preempted on local Fox affiliates. And then FS1 will have the United States and France next week. And France is a team that has generally played well against the United States historically. So that will be an interesting match. So that's the She Believes Cup on TV. And MLS season starts this week. Chris, you've got some news about that.
Yeah, Fox Sports has hired a new MLS sideline reporter. Julie Stewart-Binks is over at ESPN now and makes her debut for the MLS coverage on ESPN this weekend, but they've hired someone by the name of Katie Witham. I'm not familiar with her, Kartik. I'm not sure if you are, but she starts with Fox this weekend.
I am. She did Columbus Crew games for a number of years, and it seems to be one of these people who was in sports journalism. She did Cleveland Indians games and some other Cleveland team, maybe the Cavaliers also, games also for their local Fox, Fox Sports Ohio. But she seems very well-versed in soccer, was one of the more knowledgeable soccer sideline reporters slash co-commentators doing MLS games. So this is a good hire, and I think this is a sign, again, that Fox wants somebody who understands the sport and is going to do their research and do their work entering a game on the sideline. Losing JSP is, I think, a pretty big blow to Fox. She goes to ESPN at a time where ESPN is losing rights, so that's a whole other issue. But she certainly upgrades ESPN's MLS coverage, in my opinion, and that was a big loss for Fox. Big shoes to fill, but I think this is a good hire.
One of our listeners, Rico Richardson, tweeted something this morning, Kartik, and said, "Sadly disappointed, there is no serious build-up towards this MLS season." Kartik, on your side, what's your sense in terms of kind of on a scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being off the charts, in terms of whether it's people you've spoken to or just kind of the vibe or feeling in terms of the interest or hype going into this 2017 season? What have you seen?
I mean, outside of Minnesota now, I'm a little skewed because I talk to a lot of Minnesota fans. Those are my relationships from NASL and from having worked for the league, and Minnesota was a team we owned, and then they found an owner, and that owner took up to MLS, which was great. There's a lot of excitement personally and from people I talk to about Minnesota entering MLS. Now, outside of that, Orlando's new stadium, but, you know, it's kind of ho-hum. I mean, I have to be honest. I don't think I'm sensing a lot of enthusiasm among fans in the big cities. I don't think Red Bull fans are terribly excited. They should have a good team, but the departure of Ali Curtis, the departure of Dax McCarty has hurt them. Galaxy fans are not excited about the season. It's a rebuild. They brought in Jermaine Jones. They've kept Van Dam, and they've kept Ashley Cole. So they should be solid at the back under Kurt Adolfo, but all the attacking talent is gone. Gio DeSantos. So there's not much excitement there. That's a linchpin team. I don't think there's as much excitement in Dallas because Mauro Diaz is injured. And they've tried to sign around that, but who knows if they'll be as good. Seattle, I sense there's some contentment because they won the title. I'm not sensing the energy and enthusiasm that there have been around previous MLS seasons. Now, ESPN and Fox are trying to drum this up. They are advertising more going into MLS season than I have seen in a long time. So this week on ESPN's college basketball telecast, now I don't really watch a lot of college basketball that isn't the ACC, but I watch the ACC religiously, as our former co-host Morgan Green can attest to, and I know he does as well because he's from the Mid-Atlantic states. So I watched three games Saturday and Monday, Georgia Tech Syracuse, Louisville Syracuse, four games, Florida State Duke, Miami Virginia Tech, Virginia North Carolina, and Georgia Tech Pitt. That's actually five games. MLS was advertised during every single one of those games, both in terms of an ad being run for the league, which included the Fox broadcast, by the way, and gave all three, the one ESPN, which is Orlando, New York City, and then the two Fox broadcasts for this weekend. Those ads were run, and there were promos in-game that the announcers had to read saying, coming up this weekend on ESPN, 5 o'clock Sunday, Orlando City hosts New York City FC. Now, whether the announcers were enthusiastic about it or not, that's a whole other issue. But they're pushing MLS, and they're pushing it hard, ESPN, yep, harder than I remember. So hopefully that reflects in ratings. And I think maybe that's it's part of being in year three of a contract. Maybe it's part of not having the other soccer properties to promote anymore. Or it also might be a realization that there just isn't very much enthusiasm entering this season. Maybe it's all that stuff.
Yeah,
but they are promoting MLS more than I've seen.
I think ho-hum is probably a good way to describe it. It's the same for me from here, Kartik, in terms of I'm interested in Minnesota. I'm looking forward to seeing Atlanta United. I'm going to go up to Orlando City's new stadium probably in July to go see that, to go see a game, like a Friday night game. I'm looking forward to those things personally. But it's been, like, for me here, it's been 16 years, Kartik, since we've had an MLS team in my area. So There's no local team, so it's hard. Now, if I live in Portland or Seattle or, I mean, Kansas City, it's a different story. I'm going to feel that vibe. I'm going to feel that energy and excitement.
But I'm not even sure. Look, I mean, I spent a lot of time in Orlando. I'm not going to their opener this year. I've gone the last 2 years, but I'll be in that stadium sooner or later. It might be for the NWSL opener. But I have to say, there's a lot of energy in Orlando about the team. There's a lot of energy in Orlando about the stadium. There is not that much interest in the league beyond their own team.
Right,
and
right.
The Orlando fans, and I don't know if this is the case in other MLS cities, but the Orlando fans almost were like, yeah, you know, we really don't like this league and all the stupid rules and no promotion and relegation, because of course they're a team that came up from the lower division and had to buy their way in.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of buying their way into MLS, a lot of those hardcore Orlando City fans feel they've sold their soul. They still support their club. They still love their city, but they don't feel the same way about the club's identity that they did 3 years ago when they were still in USL three seasons ago. So they or four seasons ago, they are people who watch the Premier League and watch La Liga and watch maybe some Liga MX, and then the only MLS they watch is their team. And I think that that's the case in a lot of places. I don't know for a fact that it is, but I think that's the case in a lot of places. And that just dampens the enthusiasm for the league, because an Orlando fan will be looking at these ads saying, yeah, well, I'll be at the stadium, or I'll be watching against NYCFC. Who cares about Minnesota Portland? Who cares about the other games that are being shown?
Yep.
That's the attitude. And I think MLS has not created the kind of national relevance that they had hoped they would. Now, part of their strategy has been to sign, bring U.S. national team players back from Europe. But that doesn't seem to be doing it either. And quite frankly, the United States national team is at its worst point in about 25 or 30 years in terms of just the top talent among the first 11, in spite of what Landon Donovan might say. I don't know. I can't believe he thinks that we have more talent now than we did in 2002 or 2005,
yeah.
Even like 99 or 2000 when he was first breaking in. But I think that there's very little enthusiasm among general soccer fans to watch U.S. men's national team players at this point. And there's also an assumption, even among those who follow MLS, again, referencing the people I know, the many fans I know in Orlando, who are Ruckus or ILF members, that, you know, if they're in MLS and they're a U.S. men's national team player, they really can't be that good. Now, maybe that's the wrong stereotype, maybe that's the wrong attitude, but it's a reality that MLS and U.S. soccer have to deal with and understand and try and work around if they're going to get their television ratings up this season.
I completely agree, Kartik, on all those points. And I will add just one more thing before we move on to the next segment. And that is that the opening game of the MLS season is Friday night. So there's another challenge. You got a game on FS1 on a Friday night where that's the slowest night of the week for broadcasts. So that's the challenge that they're going to have. We got Portland against Minnesota. That should be a good game. I'm looking forward to watching it. But TV ratings wise, right off the start, that's going to be a tough obstacle to try to get big numbers for that one, to get a boost from that opening weekend. But I'm sure we'll be talking about those numbers next week on next week's show.
Well, this is an issue. It's a 9:30 Eastern time start,
yeah,
time, and I'm finding that there is an issue with even the U.S. game in Chattanooga against Jamaica. If you are starting games, by the way, what's the early Premier League start on Saturday morning?
7:30.
But if you're starting games, who is it? I mean, who's playing? Last time it was Arsenal versus Chelsea that were playing at 7:30 in the morning the day after a U.S.-Jamaica game, and we saw the U.S.-Jamaica ratings weren't as high as we thought they'd be. And some people said, oh, it's because it's FS1, it's an early February non-FIFA day friendly, that all that played into it.
Yeah,
but
you got Man United against Bournemouth. So, I mean, Man United, so that right there, 7:30 on
Saturday. Yeah, so that's going to affect the rating, and that's something that MLS has to be aware of. There's also this challenge this season. We'll save this for another show, a full discussion of MLS TV ratings. But there is going to be the challenge, which Jonathan Tannenwald and Michael Lewis and others have pointed out, and I've pointed out as well, of NWSL on Lifetime coming up against MLS games on ESPN. And there might be, at the same time slot, there is such a small niche audience for MLS and U.S. soccer products. Even if they lose 50,000 to the NWSL game, that affects the rating. That affects the takeaway. So I think that's another challenge, but we'll get into that as the season progresses. And NWSL doesn't kick off for another month and a half, so maybe we'll have that discussion then.
All right, Kartik, let's move on to the segment three. I'm going to quickly go through these. We don't have all the numbers from this past weekend or this past week for TV ratings, but we will be reporting all of the numbers from the TV ratings on worldsoccertalk.com on Friday, which will include the big Liga MX numbers. Plus, we'll be reporting, of course, the MLS numbers next week too on the website. But Saturday morning, the game you mentioned earlier on in the broadcast, Kartik, the Bayern Munich against Hamburg game on FS2, 35,000 viewers. It's pretty sad number, unfortunately, but it's a 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Eastern kickoff. As a comparison, the rugby match between Saracens and Sale on Saturday, of course, it was later in the day. It was 12:30 to 2:30 on NBCSN, but that one had 75,000 viewers, so almost double. Actually, more than double the number of viewers for a rugby game. So other games, actually another poor number from Saturday was 67,000 on CNBC for Crystal Palace against Middlesbrough, and that was from the 10 a.m. to noon one. I'm surprised actually that the NBC actually decided to show that match on that one, just because Palace has been so poor this season and Borough have been scoring so few goals. Well, why the game was of huge consequence so far in terms of the relegation battle, it doesn't do much for TV viewers. But at the same time, too, there was the Chelsea-Swansea game on NBCSN, and that one had 422,000 viewers, which is pretty good for a Saturday morning game there, too. Now, Kartik, moving on to segment four, which is a listener mailbag. We've got one question or comment from Twitter, one from Facebook, and one from email. So the one from Twitter, Kartik, was Caleb Napton, and this is one that's probably we're going to get into a little bit in more detail later. But he says, "Does Turner have an app good enough to make this work? Basically, the UEFA Champions League that has game re-airings, multiple games, especially with all no sports channel." So I think he's saying that's because they don't have a exclusive 24/7 sports channel. Do they have an app that's good enough to make the Champions League work?
They don't right now, but they may do what they've done for the NCAA tournament. We'll talk about this in our feature topic of the week, and they might just stream games through an app. Now, they have experience doing that. I want to point out there's this narrative that Turner hasn't covered soccer in 27 years. That's not true. They actually were involved in helping USL with their streaming product. I don't know that anyone that was worked at USL at the time is still there in the Tampa offices. But 2007 and 2008, they had set up a streaming product which worked through USL Live. Now, it wasn't an app. We didn't have smartphones. Our smartphones were just starting out then. But it was a streaming product online, which I think now would be an app. Yeah. As when they got the NCAA tournament rights in 2011, you saw Mega March Madness launch as an app every year that has a superior streaming product and a superior streaming experience. So I think they might launch some sort of U.S.-oriented or U.S.-based with a geo-block somehow, UEFA Champions League app, perhaps. So, but they do not have their own – no, they don't have their own TBS sports app. They also run NBA TV, and it's run out of their studios in Atlanta. And that has a streaming component. So we'll get all to that. We'll get to all of that in the next segment.
Robert Hay Jr. On Facebook asks, "Does this mean that Ernie Johnson gets the studio show?" What do you think, Kartik?
I think it'd be pretty cool. I think it would be kind of cool to see Craig Sager do some soccer. He just passed away, unfortunately. Sports broadcasting legend, Turner Sports legend, going back to, I want to say, he went back to doing Braves games in the late 70s. It would be kind of cool if Ernie Johnson Jr. did some soccer games. I'm not sure if he will. I think he's the kind of guy that'll prepare so well that you won't. It won't be like the necessarily the Gus Johnson experience or the experience of ESPN throwing in. And let's not forget, ESPN was the one that pushed this American sports voices in soccer before Fox did, pushing people on us at the same time when Fox had guys like Christian Miles and Max Brados, who were soccer fans, who were very comfortable with soccer, doing their broadcasts, Nick Webster, et cetera. We had ESPN pushing Gabe O'Brien on us and others. I think Ernie Johnson is such a pro that he might be okay, but I'm thinking they'll hire a soccer person. Who knows who that'll be? I would love for it to be John Strong, but then that would take him off of MLS broadcasts on Fox unless they can work some sort of deal.
Yeah, yeah. And actually at worldsoccertalk.com, we've got our my suggestions of who the talent is that that Turner Sports should hire for the Champions League, which goes through the studio hosts, the commentators, and the studio analysts. And we're getting a lot of great discussion, a lot of debate about those names and kind of pros and cons, and also as well as some other suggestions. So keep on giving us that feedback. Speaking of feedback, one last question, Kartik. This is from Dave Brunk, one of our listeners who came in through this came in through email. And he talks about last week's topic, which is talking about which soccer leagues in the U.S. are the most accessible on U.S. TV. And he says, for me, having DirecTV, the Premier League is the easiest. Then it's the Bundesliga. Then he says, I'm not sure. He says, I agree, MLS seems very difficult. He says, living in Houston and having our regional root sports, it's confusing at best. And we've heard that, too, from other listeners, too, where they've... the challenges of regional channels and blackouts and so on there too. All right, Kartik, that last segment of the show is our feature topic of the week, and this is the one that probably most of our listeners will be most interested in, especially given that we talked about this last week on this show. We talked about the latest news, and we revealed that Turner Sports was one of the names in there, and. And actually, going back to Robert Hay, his question on Facebook he sent in, he said, Kartik, he says, Kartik Krishnaiyer nailed the Turner Sports news on the last podcast, which is true, Kartik. You definitely were, I think, more open and thinking that this, that could possibly happen. On my side, I didn't think that they would be willing to spend the money that they were going to need to spend to get it. But still, so we broke the news on Friday. We had the exclusive on the worldsoccertalk.com website, and basically social media and the website went crazy in terms of traffic and comments, in terms of people with feedback. So people had people were shocked, people were saddened, people were jubilant. I mean, it was all sorts of different types of emotions. But what I want to talk about on this segment, Kartik, is what this means for soccer fans. And maybe to start off with, too, because like for people like myself, and I'm sure there's a bunch of other listeners, too, there are kind of hardcore soccer fans that may not be that familiar with Turner Sports, may not be watching TNT or some of the other Turner Sports broadcasts. From your experience kind of watching, whether it's college basketball or other sports, what can we as soccer fans expect based on what you've seen on other sports properties that they've shown?
Yeah, so first off, I don't watch the NBA and I don't watch Major League Baseball, so I can't comment on Turner's coverage of those leagues, although I'm told their NBA coverage. When I used to watch the NBA in the early 2000s, they were very good. I thought they were better than ESPN at that point in time. Now, who knows the situation now? But they, because the rights are split, the NBA splits their rights, cable rights, between ESPN and Turner. Actually, so does Major League Baseball then. So I can't comment on their baseball coverage, but their NBA coverage has historically been very good. And the feeling among a lot of people in the business is the NBA is the league it is today because of the way Turner has covered the league. And that's why it's a strong. I don't know. I guess it's a strong second to the NFL in terms of professional sports league. I think it's stronger than Major League Baseball and certainly stronger than the NHL or Major League Soccer in terms of pro sports leagues. When Turner got the rights to the NCAA tournament in 2011, I was initially very skeptical. CBS had covered the tournament, the entire tournament from start to finish since 1990. They had actually covered the bulk of the tournament since 1982. ESPN had had parts of the first round and parts of the Sweet 16 from 82 to 89. And just because there were weekday telecasts that they bumped to ESPN. But for 20 plus years, it had been just on CBS, including those weekday, midday games, basketball games. CBS has had one channel at the time, right? Their over-the-air channel. And they would essentially be forced to show one game when there would be three or four games going on at once in the NCAA tournament in those early rounds. Now, when the Iraq War started in 2003, they made a short-term deal with ESPN to bump some games to ESPN just for that week, because the Iraq War started with the NCAA tournament started in 2003, and CBS had to show 24/7 news. But other than that, they could cover the tournament exclusively for 20-something years. Turner came into the contract having either not covered college basketball ever, or maybe they had covered college basketball in the early 80s, and I wasn't aware of it. But ever since I began following college basketball very closely in the late 1980s, Turner had never broadcast a game, a single game, on any of their networks, college basketball games. So I was thinking, gosh, this is ridiculous. I mean, how can they cover this sport they know nothing about? And I'll admit, year one, NCAA Tournament 1, the 2011 tournament, there were some hiccups because they were using NBA people and NBA crews on games, and it was obvious that they had just done some quick fire research on college basketball and really didn't know the personalities and players, etc. But by 2012, they had really found their niche with it, and that included the NBA guys that had been assigned to it, and they had began mixing in crews from CBS and people from CBS giving really kind of outstanding studio analysis, which is what I think Turner is best known for with their NBA coverage. And their streaming product was far superior to anything we had gotten from CBS in the past. I mean, it was ease of access, ease of watch, I think probably redefined how you could show live sports in the smartphone era. The Turner Sports streaming Mega March Madness. So those are the things that I look for now going into the Champions League. They don't cover any other soccer leagues. They haven't covered soccer in a long time. The last time they've had their own talent cover soccer was 2001 to 2003 with the WUSA, a league that Turner invested heavily in and went belly up. That was a women's league, by the way. So they haven't covered men's soccer since the 90 World Cup. They haven't covered U.S. soccer since 2003. I think, though, that they will probably now, with a long run-up to this, do a really good job in the studio. And I have to think, even though they don't have a dedicated streaming product, and that came up in the question that Caleb sent us in the last segment, that they will create an app for smartphones, which maybe just a dedicated Champions League on Turner app where you get everything. You get 8 games. And then there's also the factor of the DirecTV aspect, the AT&T merger with Time Warner, if that's approved, how they can use the AT&T bandwidth to distribute these games.
Mm-hmm. It's quite possible, and we've talked a little bit about this in the show, but it's quite possible that this might be a purely over-the-top streaming pay service where TV's not involved. And it could be that, I mean, Turner Sports is looking at the Champions League saying, okay, all right, great, we've got the Champions League rights. Now we're going to offer this via kind of over the top streaming pay service instead of television, where if you want to watch Champions League, you have to pay, I don't know, $25 a month, and that's the only way you can access it. Hopefully they don't go that route. You mean, because this is a huge opportunity to make the Champions League more accessible to mainstream soccer fans. I mean, Turner Sports, I mean, channels like TBS and TNT, for many people are on basic cable packages. And it gives an opportunity for soccer to kind of really kind of enter more of the mainstream and make it more accessible for soccer fans to be able to watch these games instead of on your FS1, and then you got, well, that's okay, but FS2, not everyone gets. Fox Soccer Plus, I mean, it's still a challenge. I mean, I still can't get it on my Comcast. I have to get it through Fubo. So there's definitely some plays here that are going to be, I mean, what does it mean for soccer fans? It means that there's going to be changes. Soccer probably might become more mainstream because of Turner's involvement, but there's going to be probably, hopefully, some more opportunities, hopefully, to make it more accessible. But at the same time, it actually could be the opposite, where it could actually be a paid service, and that's the only way you can watch it is by paying X amount of dollars per month, and that's it.
Yeah, I would say it's also important to note that Turner does not show football currently. They don't show college football. They don't show the NBA. And I think they might be more dedicated. American football, we're talking about. They might be more dedicated to promoting soccer coverage than the other networks that do show football, Fox and ESPN. Now, NBC has the Sunday night NFL package and Notre Dame football, and so it hasn't really conflicted, but I still think it's not the top priority at that network. Now, the NBA will always be the top priority to return, and rightfully so. I think they've been great partners now for almost 30 years, or for more than 30 years, excuse me. They've been great partners, Turner and the NBA. But the NBA audience, at least from my experience, there's more crossover with European soccer fans than there is with the NFL audience. Mm-hmm. So I and with the college football audience, it's demographics, it's age, it's that sort of thing. And I think Turner probably realizes, with their audience being that demographic that likes basketball, that's why they went after the NCAA basketball rights too. That's why they went after the NCAA tournament. That soccer fits a niche. I think hockey might fit a niche with them too, but NBC's not letting go of that. So I think demographically, they're more in tune with the kind of audience that watches soccer than ESPN and Fox, or maybe not NBC, but ESPN and Fox. So they probably will promote it differently. And I think that's going to be positive for American soccer fans. I can't stress to you how important it is to have games on a network that doesn't show college football constantly. Mm-hmm. And that's both Fox and Fox more recently, but ESPN forever, which is why people would say, well, why couldn't ESPN ever make the commitment to show the Premier League or show La Liga when they had La Liga rights? Why didn't they ever make that commitment that NBC has now made to the Premier League and that BN has made to La Liga? And it's simply put, you run up against college football. Pre-game shows at 10 a.m. on Saturday mornings. Yep. You run up against college football games now, even starting at 11 a.m. on some Saturdays, you know, always at noon. So, and Fox has run up against that too, which is why we went from having games at 12:30 on Saturdays on Fox Soccer Channel with a distribution of about 38 million people to having games the next year on NBC over the air with a distribution of about 120 million people, because you just have to be on a network which doesn't show college football. And yes, the Champions League is a midweek property, so it's a little different, but it's also the promotion and priority of it. And I think Turner will give it a higher emphasis in their family of sports properties than Fox did and than ESPN did. That's indisputable. That's not a shot at Fox or ESPN. They don't have football. And football is the driver of so much of the sports audience in this country.
Right. American football. So I mean, to me, I almost like taking a step back, Kartik, I think for me, for soccer in the United States, this is a big deal. Just you mean whether it's Champions League, Major League Soccer, you name it, it's a big deal, because this is a major media company that's investing in soccer TV rights. And that's another player. I mean, you've got your Foxes, your NBCs, your ESPNs. Now you have Turner Sports. And as we mentioned in the news segment, Turner Sports is owned by Time Warner. And it looks like that AT&T is trying to acquire Time Warner for $85 billion. So here's another large-scale media company that's not just dipping its toe, but it's diving into soccer big time. At the same time, I've heard some murmurings too that Turner Sports is also trying to acquire some other soccer rights. So it's quite possible that Turner Sports could become quite a player in an already fragmented world of soccer on US TV, where we have access. I mean, well, we have to have beIN Sports, Univision, Fox, NBC, ESPN, Gold TV, Azteca, etc. And Turner Sports might be another one on top of that too, if we want to be able to watch kind of, you mean, a large sampling of some of the best of world soccer. But this is a big deal. This is a real big deal, not just for the UEFA or the Champions League, but for soccer in this country.
And I should also point out, for people who tend to travel a lot and are stuck in hotel rooms during major soccer matches, this is part of the reason why I've advocated NBC keeping a game on either CNBC or USA Network, because NBCSN is not in most hotels, right?
Right.
You will see the NBC over-the-air game, but you won't see those games on NBCSN. You won't see – Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2 are not in most hotel rooms. if you're traveling during a Champions League week, if they show the games on TNT and TBS, and we don't know that, but we have to assume they will based on the amount of money they're spending for this package. Those channels are always on. If you get 20 channels in a hotel you're staying in, usually TNT and TBS are two of the 20. So that's I think that's pretty good as far as accessibility. I think it makes the product a heck of a lot more accessible. And again, I mean, this is an unfortunate thing because Fox is now 4 years into the FS1, FS2 era. There are a lot of people who have FS1 that don't realize they have FS1 or don't know what channel it is on their cable system. Even more that don't know if they have FS2 and don't know what channel it is.
Right.
TBS and TNT are recognized brands, they're established channels. It's much easier if you're going to, let's say, a friend's house or a family member who isn't into soccer and doesn't watch this stuff, to say, hey, the game is on TNT, and they'll, they'll turn it on. For you to say, hey, the game's on FS1, what channel is that? And generally they won't know. They don't watch Fox Sports 1.
Right.
Or they don't think of Fox Sports 1 as a prominent channel. And I think it has to do a lot with the age of those channels. And that's unfortunate as well. And so I think it's just going to make the game more accessible, to be honest with you. And then that's a gateway to watching other soccer. So and it'll be interesting to see what Turner does with other rights. I mean, I could very easily see them trying to snag La Liga rights.
Yep.
That would make a lot of sense once they have the Champions League. How that would affect BN, who seem to have pulled back from bidding on properties that they don't own and I think are kind of just in that consolidation phase more than anything as a channel, as a relatively new channel. If BN were to lose one of those leagues, and I think it would be La Liga, I can't see Turner making a bid on some random other league. Although one thing I would look out for, Chris, and I'm just going to throw this out here. I thought about it a lot this week. I'm not sure it'll happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen, and maybe Fox can put it down. Fox's deal with the Bundesliga is an international deal. It's a 5-year deal.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And the U.S. is part of that package. Could Fox in the United States just say, hey, we're done with this league soccer business. We're just covering soccer tournaments and Major League Soccer, U.S. soccer, at the end of this Champions League contract? That would be after 4 seasons of the 5-year Bundesliga deal and sublicense that last year to Turner to do Bundesliga.
Yeah,
and then Turner just bids on it after that and keeps the rights.
I don't think so, only because of with losing the Champions League, that really, I mean, for fans of European soccer, other than tournaments, other than like the World Cup, fans of European soccer, what are you going to watch on Fox Sports? I mean, what's left? So you've got the FA Cup, which is coming up for renewal this year, which they may or may not get. But in the big scheme of things, that's tiny, really. So I think the Bundesliga, if anything, actually becomes more important for Fox, because now that's their way of trying to cross-promote Major League Soccer or the World Cup or other broadcasts. I think by losing this midweek, which is a big deal, I mean, just think about it. After June 2018, there is no midweek soccer on FS1 or FS2. So for me, I mean, I'm not the average sports fan, but for me, as a hardcore soccer fan, I have no interest in tuning into FS1 or FS2 Monday through Friday. Now, Friday night through Sunday night, I'll tune in and I'll watch a ton of the games, etc. So it's a big issue for Fox Sports. I mean, of course, they've got the World Cup, through to 2026, so they've got the big tournaments, but midweek, there's nothing there. So I think actually for the Bundesliga, it becomes more important where the numbers are still not good and they don't seem to be rising, but at least that's a gateway. At least there's an opportunity to pull in some of the European soccer fans and get them to watch some of the Bundesliga games and then maybe use that as a cross-promotion tool to promote their other properties, other soccer rights. But Kartik, I don't see that happening, but you never know. It's a strange old world out there. One thing I will say, though, Kartik, is ESPN. I mean, what's going on with ESPN with this whole thing? Because we know that they didn't bid on the Premier League rights when they came up for bidding, like, what, a year or two ago. So they passed on that. And we know that with this round for the UEFA Champions League, they didn't bid either. They had BAMTech bid, which is their partly owned by Disney, but it's the Major League Baseball's digital streaming platform, basically that they've kind of is kind of an offshoot of that. But
yeah, it's an offshoot of MLB.com.
Right. So ESPN, like on two major soccer properties, technically haven't bid on those. They're just taking a pass on that. So while it's a worry for Fox with losing the Champions League, I think for ESPN, this is like sending some, I don't know, dangerous messages for soccer fans. I mean, what's with
I
ESPN?
Think it's for everything. Look, I think we cover soccer. I check the rights for other things, non-soccer properties. I haven't kept up with it. But my understanding is ESPN has spent too much money, overextended itself on college sports rights, on college conference rights. The ACC package, which is a 10-year package. The SEC package, which I believe is a 12-year package. The Pac-12 package, which I believe is 10 or 12 years. And the Pac-12 had historically been a property that had been on Fox Sports networks and then had shifted some of their games to Versus, and which is now NBCSN. ESPN did a lot for that and launched the Pac-12 network also. Same thing with the Longhorn Network and Big 12 rights, Big 12 was another thing that had traditionally been the domain of Fox. Now it's split between Fox and ESPN, but ESPN has spent a lot of money on it. And then, of course, the Big Ten. So I think they're overextended. They signed long-term deals. These weren't 3-year deals. These weren't 5-year deals. These were 10 or 12-year deals. And they launched SEC TV or SEC Network in Atlanta. That's an ESPN channel. And I think college sports has sucked up, and then also the college football playoff, sucked up the rights to where they are just spoken for years in terms of money at a time when cable subscriptions are diminishing and their profit margins are going away. So my guess is that they're probably not well positioned to do anything but maintain the rights they have currently.
Yep.
In other sports. Now, in those other sports, that means they're the dominant broadcaster in college football. They are the dominant broadcaster in regular season college basketball, but we've already pointed out that Turner comes in for the postseason, and CBS, which has a lot of regular season, but not nearly what NBC ESPN and Fox have, is the tournament. They're the dominant. They have NFL, right? The Monday Night Football, and they're the dominant Major League Baseball broadcaster for much of the season. Although, of course, Fox gets the bulk of the playoffs, and Turner gets parts of the playoffs too. But they're not going to get NHL rights anytime soon, and I don't think they're going to get any other soccer properties beyond Major League Soccer. And they are out of – this is also telling. I actually say that I don't follow the rights for other sports. I do follow golf and tennis. They are the dominant network. They dominate tennis coverage in the United States. They have everything.
Right.
In terms of golf, they are basically out of the golf business. They have the first 2 rounds of the Masters, and that's it. And the first 2 rounds of the Masters are broadcast with CBS personnel, but are shown on ESPN. They are out of the golf business. They don't have any early rounds of tournaments. Those are all on the Golf Channel, which is owned by Comcast and NBC. They are out of the majors completely. The last major they had was the Open Championship. They lost that to NBC last year. They used to cover the first 2 rounds of the U.S. Open. They lost that to FS1. 2 years ago. So they golf is an indicator that they're also in the same position they're in soccer. They've lost rights there. I'm not sure who ESPN still has as a golf host, and in fact, or who covers golf at that network. Mike Tirico was the one guy that they had that was consistently on their golf coverage, and he left as soon as they lost these rights, and he had done soccer, and they lose some soccer rights, so he left.
Yep.
So I think it spreads beyond just soccer, actually.
Plus, ESPN lost 2 million subscribers in 2016, so they've got some issues to deal with.
It's all related to that. When I say they're losing golf rights and they're losing soccer rights, and it's related to all that loss of subscriptions and also to their long-term play to lock down college football so that CBS and NBC and Fox couldn't take rights away from them in college football, because college football is the biggest driver besides the NFL. So in order to lock down everything they locked down in college football, they overextended themselves to block the other networks out, and now the other networks can pick and choose and divide up the rest of the sports empire, really.
Yep. So ESPN's got Euro 2020 and the Nations League, which I think goes through to 2022 with their rights. So I think by the look of it, at least, I mean, after 2022, I mean, you might see an exodus of soccer talent from ESPN in terms of, okay, well, I mean, between now and then, maybe they'll pick up some other rights. but it doesn't look that promising. I mean, if I'm at Taylor Twellman, I'm thinking, okay, great, Euro 2020, I'm looking forward to that. But what comes after that, I mean, it doesn't look that pretty right now. The other thing, Kartik, is NBC's involvement in this. So we know that, so my sources kind of revealed that Turner Sports is paying $60 million a year for these rights. Univision's paying $40 million for the Spanish language rights. This is a massive deal for Univision.
Well, and let's touch on that for a second. Univision has never really shown a commitment to showing European football.
Yep.
This is quite a breakthrough. And does this help promote Major League Soccer? I'm sorry, we have to always come back to this topic, but Univision is the long-term rights holder for MLS. Does this help promote Major League Soccer among Hispanic audiences that will be watching the Champions League on Univision, or does it do the opposite and have Univision think, you know, we got the Champions League now, Liga MX is the big driver on our network, maybe MLS is less of a priority, we're not even going to promote it? I mean, that's the question.
Yeah, I think it hurts MLS. I mean, it's another opportunity for especially a rapidly growing Hispanic population in the United States to watch quality soccer, to make it more accessible. I mean, they're already watching the games anyway, but this makes it even more accessible. And the more soccer that we have at our fingertips that we can watch through our remotes or streaming devices, I think the less relevant MLS becomes.
Because yeah, and
you,
I don't,
weigh
I don't
it up
know
side
from,
by side.
I don't know from a Spanish language perspective how ESPN Deportes is going to keep going when they are too now losing soccer rights left and right, and that's even more critical on the Spanish language end than on the English language end to not have any significant soccer rights beyond. I don't know what Deportes has left at this point. I mean, they had been able to sub-license Champions League games from Fox, which had kept them rolling these last few years. But I think they're in big trouble.
Yeah, big time. I mean, they've got niche games. They've got like DFB Pokal, the German Cup games. They've got some friendlies, international World Cup friendlies.
Copa del Rey.
Yeah.
Copa del Rey
in
Spanish is on Deportes, I think. It's not on...
ESPN2 usually shows like the final, but
But
going back to what I was going to say before too, I mean, this is a big deal for Univision. We'll get onto that on another show probably. But with so Turner Sports paid $60 million for this, Univision paid $40 million. Reports are that Fox put in a bid of around $30 million a year for this one. Now, according to one of my sources from Fox Sports, from within Fox Sports, they were saying that NBC Sports, the only reason that NBC Sports was interested in the Champions League was to try to increase the bidding price that Fox would have to put in to try to get these rights. Now, my source revealed that NBC didn't put in the bid. I think Sports Business Journal said that they put in a token bid. So whether it's token or no bid, basically NBC was involved in the process but decided not to put in a significant bid. And maybe that was one of those kind of poker plays where they're just trying to increase the value and try to get whoever gets the rights, whether it's Turner Sports or Fox Sports, is make them pay through the nose and make them pay a lot of money for this, make it more competitive. So that's interesting too. I don't think NBC loses out by this by any means. I mean, with the Premier League, they've got enough on their hands. Champions League would have been nice, but you mean if it's not the right price for them, and if they're not able to generate the revenue from the advertising side and ad dollars, then maybe it's not as attractive of a property. But it's more important, I think, for Turner Sports.
Right, and Turner is able to spend more money, again, because they're not bidding ridiculous money on American football properties.
Exactly.
So you're running a risk if you tap up the cost of everything in soccer and in other sports that things end up going to Turner. Now, Turner lost – they had the rights to the to much of the Open Championship. They lost that to NBC recently, and that was split between Turner and ESPN. Then ESPN had the full rights for the last 7 years, so never mind. But Turner does not – they have just niche properties other than basketball. They have the first two rounds of the PGA Championship. They have like the PGA – they have some assorted golf events, but very few – they have no PGA Tour events. and they're not in the tennis game. So they have the money to spend. Mm-hmm. Particularly if this merger goes through, I could see them in the next round of bidding on things really going wild. Now, we're 5 years away from the next Premier League rights coming up. Mm-hmm. If Turner is comfortable with the Champions League at that point, NBC may have just kind of unleashed a new competitor that the unintended consequences of trying to push Fox and ESPN out of the game. Because, again, I don't think Turner has not broadcast football of any kind since the XFL went out of business, the infamous XFL in 2001. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that they're into the idea of covering American football anymore. I think it makes sense. Your sources are telling you they might be bidding on other soccer properties. It makes a lot of sense to me that they're going to – that this could be like basketball, kind of a niche for them, because they don't – they covered NASCAR for a while, but they lost those rights. They don't really have a lot of sporting property. Now, of course, they don't have a dedicated sports channel, but at the same time, they have the type of kind of variety programming with movies and sitcoms. I have to admit, I watch a lot of movies on TNT, and not really on TBS, but on TNT and on Turner Classic Movies. I watch Turner Classic Movies all the time. They have the kind of portfolio of other non-sporting items that I think crosses over with the kind of audience soccer has developed in the United States. So I think it's a really good fit. That's my opinion. I know I'm much more bullish on this than other people. Some people are skeptical about Turner. I think a lot of people are just happy Turner got the rights because it's not Fox, but they haven't thought through the implications of Turner getting the rights. I'm pretty bullish on this whole thing.
Yeah, and that's one thing, too, just to remind listeners, too. So this doesn't happen until August or September of 2018. So Fox has one more season of just over a year of Champions League that's remaining. So we've got the rest of this season, and then we've got next season. It's a big blow for people like Rob Stone, but, I mean, you've got the World Cup rights, too. So, you mean, you've got basically kind of a guaranteed job there for the next three World Cups. But the thing that surprised me, Kartik, was that... I was shocked, and this takes a lot, but I was personally shocked at the number of people that were celebrating that Fox lost the rights. And I know that there's a ton of people that hate Fox's coverage of soccer, but even I was surprised by the number of people that were celebrating on social media.
It was jubilation. It was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned this in the article I wrote earlier in the week for World Soccer Talk. Twitter was lit that night, which was last Friday, I believe. It was when we broke the story first here at World Soccer Talk. It was absolutely lit, going maybe 9-1 ratio of people celebrating, saying, "Hey, we're not really sure about Turner, but it's not Fox. They can't possibly be as bad." It was the general sense, and I feel that I'm not a fan of Fox's soccer coverage compared to NBC and ESPN, but I think it's a little unfair considering all the sacrifices and commitment that Fox has made to broadcast this sport, and we've gotten to the point in this country with this sport largely because of their commitment. So it's unfortunate to see that, but we have a lot of newer soccer fans who just cannot stand Fox.
Yeah, and they've improved by leaps and bounds for sure, and both in quantity and in quality of coverage, but there's still things that they do that just I think upset me, but also I was just really surprised by the number of people, I mean, huge number of people that kind of said the same things or said similar things in terms of just, I mean, whether it's Lalas, who's such a polar figure in terms of whether you love him or hate him, but they just have a lot of personalities and a lot of, just the way that they approach soccer just turns a lot of people off. And I was just really shocked by the number of people that came out of the woodwork on this one. But that's the thing, though, Kartik. I mean, like you said, too, is that we don't know yet. We don't know all the details. We don't know what their vision is. We don't know if this is going to be a purely streaming product, because with the amount of games, I mean, it's not just Champions League, but it's Europa League games, too. With the amount of games that are shown, we don't know, I mean, those what Turner Sports is thinking yet. What we do know, though, is that with these new rights that start in 2018 for the 2018-19 season of the Champions League, is that the game kickoff times for Champions League matches are going to be, instead of 2:45 Eastern time, it's going to be 1 o'clock Eastern time and then 3 o'clock Eastern time. So it's going to be slightly staggered You might have Real Madrid against Bayern Munich at 1 p.m. and then Barcelona against Manchester City at 3 p.m. So there's a good opportunity here for a double headers, which for soccer fans and for TV companies, this is a dream come true in terms of trying to have a block of time that's basically 4 hours of back-to-back quality soccer. But at the same time, we know that there's, half a dozen other games are happening at the same time. So how does Turner Sports get those games on, whether it's their sister channels or by that time, if they're being acquired by AT&T, which acquires Time Warner, maybe there's some other
they
channels.
They also have... I forgot they also have True TV,
right.
They have used to show, by the way, they have used to show the play-in games for the NCAA tournament, which are kind of sub-tournament games. You the field is 68 and they wither down to 64, which you bracket for 64, right? So there are these play-in games that are the 2 days before the tournament starts, and they show those on True TV, which is a network which is less prominent. That's probably where the Europa League, if the Europa League's even going to be on television, that's probably where it goes. Mm-hmm. But as far as Champions League, I could see them doing 1 in 3 on TNT and maybe one of the time slots on TBS also. So maybe 3 games each day people will get.
The timing of this, Kartik, is perfect too, because I mean the Fox rights end at June 2018 for the Champions League, and then Turner Sports picks them up in basically August of 2018, kind of where they're kind of the qualification rounds. But it's right after a World Cup. So you right. and I know from the 2006 World Cup, every single World Cup, there's a huge rise. Whether the U.S. does well or not, there's always a huge rise in interest in that sport. And this is the perfect way to kind of take that and pull them into
right.
I remember
2006 World Cup coming right out of it. You had this newfound interest and people trying to find something to watch. And Bill Simmons, who is one of the most prominent sports voices in the country, is more of an NBA guy than an American football guy, as we know, right? He's persona non grata with the NFL, writes this long column for ESPN. This was before ESPN, and he fell out again because he's more objective about the NFL than ESPN would like, being a rights holder. Wrote this long article coming out of the World Cup about, okay, so the Premier League is the league I'm going to follow, and I have to pick a team. And he went through all 20 teams that were in the league that year and determined that he was going to be a Spurs fan. And he's remained a Spurs fan now for 12 years or 11 years, however long since that World Cup. But I remember that article being a driver of people saying, well, Bill Simmons likes soccer now.
Yep.
Well, maybe we should. And every World Cup we've had this. 2010, we had a huge bump coming out of the World Cup that I can attest to as someone who was working in the game at the time. With the North American Soccer League, that we had a huge bump in interest in our teams at the second division level in the United States. And then 2014, we saw a similar bump. Now, the risk here is that you hit a law of diminishing returns at some point. It's also possible the U.S. doesn't qualify for 2018. We've never really had to say that about previous World Cups. And if that's the case, then I don't know how it affects the audience. Although, based on the types of numbers ESPN does for the Euros and the amount of interest that we see still in South American soccer and in Mexico, I think World Cup ratings will still be pretty high for Fox, even if the U.S. doesn't qualify.
Yep.
Now, the issue being that Fox has gone very much in an ESPN 2006 direction, making so much of what they do about the United States and about Major League Soccer and promotion of that. That might be the issue. But if they can pivot to a more general soccer feel, that might lead perfectly into what Turner wants to do in 2018, starting in August with Champions League, because those will be all European clubs with players from, presumably, players from outside of the USA, other than maybe Christian Pulisic, who hopefully will still be at Dortmund at that point and be playing as much as he does currently.
Yeah. In some ways, I almost feel like that Fox, this is kind of karma to Fox. Which is, I don't know, maybe that's a bit harsh, but in terms of like Fox has been taking the Champions League for granted, and we've talked about this for a few months now, where the pre-game show, which should be 30 minutes of kind of, all right, let's talk about these matches coming up, but instead it's been turned into a Fox Soccer report that talks about, Major League Soccer, US Soccer, Klinsmann, whatever it may be, it's turned into a soccer news show. So in some ways they've kind of taken it for granted, kind of misused some of that UEFA Champions League opportunities there, but at the same time, though, too, at the end of the day, it's money talks and that bidding process.
Yeah, if you want Champions League match previews, you have to watch the Monday night and Tuesday night editions of ESPN FC.
Right.
Yeah, because they go in depth into every match, and they'll bring in, there's a German team involved, they'll bring Hangenstein in, or if it's a Spanish team, they'll bring Sid Lowe in, and Gab Marcotti is usually on the show adding insight. And that's the kind of coverage you would expect Fox to have leading into these Champions League games. But instead, you know, I guess I haven't been as – it hasn't been as much of a bugaboo publicly for me because I just don't watch the Fox pregame shows. I know what to expect, and I watch ESPN FC every night. And sometimes I catch it the next morning on my DVR when I wake up. But I'm up to date with ESPN FC, and I get all the kind of preview of Champions League I need from that show and from the insights of Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop and Steve Nichol. I don't need Fox, but the reality is the vast majority of people watching the Champions League are not watching ESPN FC. They're watching Fox, and they're watching that pregame show, and they're not getting what they want.
Yeah, I mean to end this segment, Kartik, I just hope that Turner Sports kind of takes a page from NBC Sports. When NBC Sports acquired the rights to the Premier League, they knew nothing about soccer. I mean, they had very little knowledge within the organization in New York City about the sports. They didn't really know much about it at all. And I think Turner Sports is in a very similar situation in terms of a corporation that's very focused on basketball and other sports. But really, the thing that NBC did the research. So they looked at websites, they looked at forums, they talked to people and tried to get as much information as possible about what viewers liked, what they didn't like, and kind of what was most appealing and things like that. So they did their research, and it shows. It shows in terms of...
One last point I should make is that CNN has for years had the World Sports Show, which has been aired out of their Atlanta studios and is heavily focused on soccer. So there's some knowledge even in the building. They have that advantage over what NBC had. There is some knowledge even in the building at Turner's headquarters in Atlanta of soccer. They just have to go across the aisle to the international, CNN International, across the building and talk with some folks. NBC didn't even have that, and look at how well they've done.
Yeah, that's a great point. And hopefully Turner Sports kind of basically it takes this time. They have the time to go ahead and do the research and do everything that they need to know. They can do a great job, and this could be a huge hit for Turner Sports. Fingers crossed, knock on wood. All right, Kartik, so thanks for everyone for listening to this show. So Kartik, where can they find you on Twitter if they want to hit you up with any feedback?
KKFLA737.
Okay, and listeners too, if you do have any questions, feedback, or you disagree with us, I mean, let us know. You can contact us through email at web@worldsoccertalk.com. Twitter is WSoccerTalk. And then Facebook is facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. We'd love to get your feedback and questions and comments and to read those out on air on the next episode. So basically, if you're listening to this, you can get new episodes every Thursday of the World Soccer Talk podcast through SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, and of course, worldsoccertalk.com. And we look forward to hearing from you. All right, Kartik, how about you?
Enjoy your football.